Welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Dr. Cody, an American-born Australian chiropractor with over 10 years' experience who has clicked, popped, and cracked his way to over 2 million followers on TikTok, allowing listeners to hear each individual adjustment sound of his patients' bodies with an ASMR-like quality that we bizarrely all really love. As a practitioner, Cody is passionate about education with a primary focus on sharing his knowledge to provide support to individual health concerns and to achieve complete wellness and prevention of disease. Three things I loved about Dr. Cody's episode. One is the in-depth discussion around the nervous system and how things such as vagal tone and the vagus nerve play such a vital role in our mental health and the different ways to stimulate that, as much as well as a huge amount of info on the science behind the chiropractic approach. We also had a good discussion about his own mental health and what it has been like on a journey toward vulnerability and awakening to his own belief that he doesn't need to be the person who he has told himself he is for a very long time. And that related to me on many deep levels. And the third thing is, I think it's just a nice episode to geek out on and put some color into a field of therapeutics, that being chiropractic, that is often very misunderstood. And Dr. Cody breaks it down in a very, very informative and interesting way. So really hope you enjoy the episode. As always, please subscribe, rate, and review. If you find value in this episode, it helps us get more guests and grow the podcast to spread the message. Introducing Dr. Cody. Mr. Cody, as someone who has blown up on TikTok as being the chiropractor, you were the OG TikTok chiropractor.
Yes, I probably was the OG.
I think you were.
Maybe.
How many followers did you accumulate from your videos?
A lot.
Like hundreds of thousands.
Oh, yeah. Like I've got, 2.8 million at the moment?
Dude?
Yeah.
Fuck are you doing here? Can't believe we've...
Because you asked.
No, I am very grateful to say that you're my chiropractor and also my friend. And I think what you do online is reflective of, I think, your business competitive advantage in that you are human. And the humanness shines through online and also shines through when you're in the clinic. And you're also just very, very good at what you do. I feel like a new human being whenever I come in for a touch up, a fix up. What inspired you to get into chiropractic?
It wasn't my first choice. I was originally, I always kind of knew that I wanted to help people. And when I was younger, I was good at school. So I was really good at maths and science, and that's what intrigued me. And then, of course, when you're a little bit smart, then it kind of pushes you in the direction of, well, do you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, and that was always kind of in the back of my mind. So I originally went to school, to university after I graduated, with the intention of going to pharmacy school. I enjoyed chemistry. I thought it was a lot of fun. I was like, yeah, I'll probably be able to make a fairly decent living doing it. And then I went to Duluth, Minnesota for undergrad at the University of Minnesota. And I worked at a nursing service pharmacy. Shout out to Folks Pharmacy in Duluth. And I had a great time working there with some amazing people. It just wasn't what I wanted to do as a career or a profession. So I found that out about two and a half, three years in. And then I had to kind of reassess my life a little bit on what I wanted. I was already kind of thinking I would do more natural pharmacy. So like I was going to sit there and like make all these potions and stuff like that. That intrigued me, right?
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, that's just a little bit out there even for me. I'm not quite that hippie. And then I don't even remember who it was. And they just kind of mentioned chiropractic to me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've been to a chiropractor when I was younger. I suppose that's a really good form of healthcare. Wow, it's natural. It's exactly what my ethos is. And so I applied to Northwestern Health Sciences University in Bloomington, Minnesota, for early admission, thinking, mm-hmm. If I don't get in, then I'll just wait another year, continue, finish out my 4-year degree in biochemistry, and I'll just go. But then, you know, a few weeks later, you get a letter in the mail saying, congratulations, you've been accepted. So all throughout my career, even to this point, these opportunities, I guess, have presented themselves, and I've been able to recognize them. And then I say, you know, either go for it or, nah, that can be pushed aside. But the ones that I've really gone for have led me to where I am today, which is what I think is where I should be. If that makes sense.
I think so too. You know, some people you see and you're just like, wow, you are totally in your element. And when I see you do your thing, you just know that this is where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And not just by the technical prowess, but by the energy you exude when you're in your flow. What is, do you think, you've probably been asked this question before, so apologies if there's some duplicates in here, but out of personal selfish interest, what is the number one myth about chiropractic?
Oh, there's quite a few out there. You know, chiropractic in general has gotten a fairly bad reputation through the years. I think some of it is, some people say like, oh, it's a pseudoscience. And I was like, well, then why the fuck did I spend all those years learning the entire body in and out, biochemistry, organic chemistry, anatomy, physiology, CNS, PNS, like the entire nervous system through and through? Why were we dissecting cadavers and learning more and really understanding how the body works? I was like, that's not a pseudoscience. That is science. So that is one thing. Like, I did all my education back home in the U.S., and we have a doctorate of chiropractic. Like, yes, I'm not a medical doctor, but that's not what I am. I'm a chiropractor. I think another thing, too, is sometimes people have had not maybe a great experience at clinics for whatever reason. Sometimes you do get the thing where I'll have other patients come in and they're like, oh, how was your previous experience with a chiropractor? And they said, oh, you know, they told me to that I had to come back, you know, 3 times a week for some arbitrary number of weeks, and then twice a week for some arbitrary number. And there is no research out there that says that there is a perfect plan that you have to stick to in order to become healthier well. So my approach is always, if you put a lot of strain and pressure on your body, then you probably need to see a chiropractor a little bit more regularly to help to alleviate some of that stress.
Because
that's what we're really good at. But if you're doing everything fine, if you're eating really well, if you're exercising regularly, if you're sleeping really well, if mentally you've got some, you know, great relationships in your life and you're there, yeah, don't come in and see me. If you're feeling great, functioning great, fuck off. People can come in because they really like getting adjusted. I love that. Oh, I just need a little tune up. And I really enjoy that. I love maintenance care, because that's what chiropractic is really good at, is prevention.
Keeping you well.
Just, you know, you'd take your car in to get serviced. Yeah. You do those things, but yet people are really bad at taking care of their bodies.
Mm.
And you do have to do maintenance every once in a while. Some more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think a lot of times there are outside influences to the profession from a business standpoint to say, in order to be successful, you need to get these people in the door more often so you can charge them more.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what I stand for.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you can still have a very successful and lucrative business by treating your patients with respect and being honest and open with them.
Amen. Agree. This is going to sound like a dumb question, but I am curious as to your answer. What is chiropractic in one sentence to you?
Ooh, one sentence. So chiropractic, for me, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this in one sentence. Because chiropractic, this is how I explain it to my patients. Maybe this is a better way of doing it. Is your body is self-healing and self-regulating. And the master control center of that is your brain and your nervous system. So if you can if you can find and remove any pressure that's on that nervous system, chiropractors alleviate that, so then your body can self-heal and self-regulate. That's it. That's all we do.
Love it. Let's double-click on that definition. So I've always believed that our spine is really important.
Very important.
Especially for our mental health, because the central nervous system is effectively housed in the spine, and therefore everything that, to do with our emotional regulation and electrical currents are coming from that core power source, from the battery, which is the brain. Yes. And then when that goes out of whack, bad things happen, to say as simply as possible. Using which technique does chiropractic see the aiding of this central nervous system process? Is it the removal of tension through joints, through tissue, through what?
All of it, all right? Of it. So the brain and the nervous system control every single cell, organ, and tissue in the body. Mm-hmm. If you were to strip away every single cell of your body except for the nervous tissue, you could still make out exactly what you look like. To a T. You'd be able to, if I was only looking at a nervous system on you, I'd be like, yeah, that's Mitch. Of course it is. Look at him. You can see him. And I think it's important to understand that, is to know that every single cell in your body is programmed to be healthy as it can be. But it's a lot of those outside influences that change that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're looking at is how we're able to identify how the nervous system functions as a whole or a unit. Now, when I do an exam, I'm looking at a whole bunch of different things, right? So when someone walks through the door, I'm already looking at how they walk. I'm looking at their posture. I'm looking at, are they looking around, taking things in? Are they communicating and making eye contact? Mosby will rush up to them, and I was like, oh, are they going to freak out that there's a Weimaraner running at them? So all of these things I'm already looking at and analyzing. 90% of my job, well, maybe not quite 90, 80% of my job is observation. Mm. That's all it is. So then finally, when we sit down and we have a one-on-one, just like what you did when you came in to see me, it's talking through what's going on. And that's all it is. Mm. And sometimes people just kind of go down different little rabbit holes, and that's cool. That's fine, because that's what's on their minds. Then once we get to the exam, it's a lot more of a physical exam. I'm looking at what kind of information the body is then telling me when we're doing very specific tests. And that then gives me a bigger, broader picture on how well this nervous system and the body is working in conjunction with each other.
Hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of different ways to do that. Now technology is even jumping ahead to where now we can start to see and analyze even inside the body at any given moment. Hmm. So neurologically. And that's really important, because it is that connection between the brain and the body that we need, that communication happening better.
Yeah, because your body wants to tell you when it's not in ease, or when it's moving into uneasiness, dis-ease.
Dis-ease. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't put that together, like, oh, disease. Oh, it must be you have some kind of infection or disease or something. But it's like, no, it's your body's telling you, I'm not happy right now.
Yeah, and I want to be at a point of homeostasis, because my intention is to be self-healing.
Exactly.
So talking about healing, you know, most chiropractors would be known as a profession for the people that crack people. So let's.
And we do.
And you do. And it feels amazing. And I know I can feel within my nervous system that there is a benefit. Now, let's look at the science of that, because I think people will geek out on it. Let's say you take my neck and you go, and you can hear the crack.
Yes.
What is actually happening anatomically in that moment?
So when that kind of cavitation happens, it is the joint capsule that's being moved in a very particular manner, and that joint creates a negative pressure in that joint. So there's gas built up in there, and then it just diffuses to the outside, and that's what actually creates that. Now, there's a whole bunch of really cool little receptors all around that joint capsule, and what we want to do is stimulate that, because if it's stuck, if it's not moving quite right, the muscles around there are really angry, and they're inflamed and tight. That poor little nerve that exits right next to there is going, oh, okay, this isn't very nice.
Mm.
So by adjusting that segment, what happens is you stimulate what's called mechanoreceptive input. So there's mechanoreceptive input and nociceptive input. Think of nociception as pain, negative emotions, all of that. When you're in pain, you're probably a little bit irritable. You're mm-hmm. a little bit annoyed. Like everything is just, nothing's working quite right. When you release that, then all of a sudden it releases endorphins, norepinephrines. It releases all these beautiful, really great chemicals in the body that go, ooh, that was nice. Ooh, I want some of that. And then the body starts craving movement. If there's anything that I tell my patients to do after an adjustment, well, I mean, all the time, is just move their body more. Because that then generates that mechanoreceptive input to the brain to say, ooh, this is nice, which will then downregulate nociception, which will downregulate cortisol, which will downregulate pain, which will downregulate all those negative things that come along with that.
Mm.
And that's what that adjustment does.
So what's the biggest benefit once an adjustment has been made? What's the biggest benefit that the body is then gaining after that? Is it that the nerve is more at ease?
Yeah, that's a good way of actually putting it. You have to keep in mind that the nervous system is composed of a lot of water. So if you've got inflammatory markers around that, that message from the brain, that electrical message, doesn't travel through that very well anymore.
Mm.
So that's why sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, Mitch, good to see you. It's been a while. Light on the table. Let's check a few things. So I start kind of moving things around, just generally feeling things. And then I'm like, okay, let's start doing some muscular tests.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'll say, you know, lift your leg up and push it down. Oh yeah, that's pretty good. Let's try the other side. Woo, that's really weak.
Mm.
Oh, and then people automatically go, oh, well, why is it weak? Do I have a weak glute? And I was like, well, you do have a weak glute, but why is it weak? It's not that the muscle is weak. It's that the signal going to that is impeded somewhere. So you're only recruiting 50% of the fibers instead of 100% of the fibers. And if there's pressure on there and all of a sudden it kind of jabs a little bit more, your body goes, ah, I like this, stop doing that. And it will purposely make the muscle weak so you let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happens. And that's why I do a lot of these different tests, is because then I can go, ooh, precisely, I'm going to adjust L5-S1 on that right-hand side. I'm going to give you that adjustment. And then I test a lot after I adjust someone.
Mm.
And then we test, and then all of a sudden, boom, miraculously, by magic, it happens. And it's strong again. And people are always amazed by that. For me, it's an expectation. That glute on that right-hand side after I adjust it should be super strong right off the bat. And a lot of people are always amazed by it. And then sometimes they go, oh, is that all it was? And I was like,
that's however many years of study and however many, yeah, that's all it was.
But
yeah.
I mean, the fact that I can make it look and feel that easy,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Like, I don't need a pat on the back every time I give a wallop of an adjustment.
Yeah.
And make them feel better and make the muscle work better and make their whole aura better.
Yeah.
But it is always a funny reaction, right?
Yeah, because it's so much more than that moment.
Yeah, and it's instantaneous. That's the beauty of it, is it happens
true
now.
Yeah, there's very few things in life where you see progress that quickly. Mm. Like you go and work out, it takes weeks, months, years. Yeah. Whereas chiropractor, you know that you're going to feel better the moment that an adjustment is made or that a stretch is done. And it's quite beautiful and admirable in a way that you're literally dealing with millimeters. Like, you know, the difference between L4 and L5, I'm no scientist, but it's not acreage of room. Like, you'll be able to be like, it's that exact vertebra and I'm going to adjust exactly this way to hit that piece of the body.
Yeah.
And I mean, the neck stuff freaks me the fuck out like it does most because people don't die the moment that someone twists their neck is amazing. But do you ever get fucking scared that you're going to over adjust or hit the wrong area?
No.
Why?
It's never crossed my mind.
Why?
I think because I've also been trained, right? So the first adjustment I ever gave, this was in chiropractic school. It was to Andrea Moulton. It was a C5 right rotated. And So you had built it all the way up. Like the training builds you all the way up. The education, you know, you're being overseen by some amazing, amazing chiropractors and professors, and you're working your way through it, through it, through it. And then finally you get to the day where they're like, right, now you can actually give the thrust, right? And you're like, oh. So then you're like, oh, what if I, and then all these thoughts run through your mind.
What if I kill this person?
Well, maybe not what if I kill them, but like, you know, how hard do I do it? Because I mean, you don't know what it feels like. I've never given an adjustment prior to that. So you're kind of like, oh, how hard should I go? I'm like, okay, so I just go through in my mind. I was like, right, so we're going to keep the head in flexion. We're going to bring it over into some lateral flexion. I'm on the articular pillar with my dip joint reinforced. And I'm going to go like this. I'm going to make sure my elbow's tucked in my side. And I remember, and then they're like, Cody, just give the adjustment. And I'm like, okay. And then it's like this. And I was like, okay, Andrea, are you okay? And I can remember just her just relaxing just that ever so slightly. And I'm like, well, fuck it.
Now or never.
Yeah. And I gave this really quick bam, and it cracked. And then I was addicted ever since. But I think,
addicted to the crack.
I think from that point, you begin to feel what it's like. And I mean, there's a lot of sensory input coming from my fingers. And I spend all day, every day, just touching and feeling. So I'm really, really sensitive. And it was such nothing else feels like it. And now every adjustment that I give, I still get that feeling. I'm still like, yep, there. I'm analyzing it. Yep, there it is. And then I know, because I'm also getting a lot of feedback when I'm adjusting someone. Because you can't just, if someone's tensing up like this, you're never going to adjust them. And you don't ever want to force it either. I will wait always for a patient to relax enough for me to give the adjustment, and I will be ninja fast on it. And that's really important. But that's part of the art, right? Like being a chiropractor, it's the science behind it all, but it's also the art of what we do.
For sure.
And that comes with experience, practice, but also I truly believe that I was born to do this. I feel like I have this inherent ability, and getting the correct training only helped.
It brought out of you what was already within.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you're like the fucking sniper of bodies. You're just like, boom, take down that little joint there and wait for this thing to pop. When you talked about the sensations and your feelings and having this almost sixth sense of what the body is wanting and needing at any point in time. Can you tell not just someone's physical health state, but someone's mental health state based on the way they feel?
Absolutely.
So you're like, oh, this person's nervous, or this person's anxious, or this person maybe has a depressed disposition.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, you can see it on their faces.
For sure. Right? But tell me what that's like to experience depression through someone's fingers.
Sometimes, like, I've had some patients go through some pretty hectic shit. And when they come in, even when my hands are touching them, even when they're just around them, you can feel something. It's not always easy to pick out what that something is, but sometimes you just have to clear your mind and just let. Yeah, you know, because we're just balls of energy. Everything's just energy, right? And you can sense that. But you have to have a clear mind when you're going into it. I can't have any ideas in my head about what I think is going on. You just have to let it come to you. And like I said, like with some of these patients that have been through hell and back, it shows in every cell of their body. You can feel it. And sometimes, you know, an adjustment isn't going to help them. And that's okay. Like a chiropractic adjustment doesn't have to fix everything.
Yep.
Sometimes just placing your hands on them is enough. And that's probably all they need.
To feel safe.
Yeah. For whatever. They're coming to you for help. Well, if this is how I'm going to help them, this is what we're going to do. And sometimes it's almost more important to understand that that's enough rather than forcing an adjustment on them, because that's not going to fix anything. It's not going to help anything.
Mm.
And we want to help. That's why people are coming in to see us. And I think that that's really important sometimes.
Trauma is stored in the nervous system, so it makes sense that you have an initial response, considering you're connecting with your hands, with your body, to someone's nervous system. It's speaking back to you.
And we're also getting up in their business. We're getting up in their space.
Yeah.
And some people, they're just not ready for that.
Yeah.
It's not welcomed. And you have to then respect that.
What are some of the most common symptoms or presentations you see in the physical body that is largely driven by a mental input or ailment?
Really tight muscles, especially traps,
mm-hmm.
neck, a forward flexed position. Usually the shoulders are rolled forward. Sometimes even the hips are rolled inward. We do tend to see that in patients that have had some form of sexual abuse.
Mm.
So we see them turning in, their bodies are trying to protect themselves.
Closed down, yeah.
Yeah, and you do see it every once in a while.
Mm.
And not that I have to ask them what they've been through, because that's all in due time. Or if I just want to make sure that they're feeling okay. And this is where I think it's, Australia has been really good about asking, are you okay?
Mm.
You know, there's Are You Okay Day. I think that every day should be that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get that check in with your loved ones, you know, check in with my patients. And sometimes I do feel compelled to ask if they're okay. And sometimes it's a yes, and sometimes it's a sigh and a yes. Sometimes, you know, and you have to be able to read that and again, respect that.
Mm.
Respect the boundaries that they've and the shit and trauma that they've been to, but then also realize that sometimes just, you know, letting things relax and just helping them to get to that point is needed and necessary.
And what percentage of patients approximately would you say present with physical issues that have nothing to do with an injury and it's just driven by emotional shit?
That's a good question. 'Cause most people's first line of defense, if they're going through anything mental, is not to come and see a chiropractor, right? However, in saying that, I would say probably about a third.
Yeah.
Is my rough estimate.
Yeah, because the logic chain I'm going on is, something's happening in my brain and in my emotional world. I don't want to go see a psychologist because there's stigma and I don't want to lift that lid up. But now, because of all the avoiding of this emotional thing, it's playing out in my body and my body's not letting me avoid it anymore. So I'm going to end up in the chiropractor's office because things are getting rigid and shutting down and I have no idea why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, then they're probably not eating overly well. They're probably not going to exercise because they feel shut down. Then they're probably going to sleep really poorly.
Mm.
And when your body's not getting good quality sleep, your body will never heal. It's the only time when your body heals itself is when you're sleeping, in that nice deep REM sleep. So that's really important that is there to support them.
Mm.
And when they're not doing those things, sure, they're going to feel like crap. And then the next day they're going to wake up from having a terrible night's rest, and then they're already behind the eight ball.
What are the, on that line of healing, what do you think is the three most healing things we can do for our nervous system specifically?
Move the body. Absolutely having to move the body. Drinking plenty of water. And as you take a drink, good boy. And the third one. Seeing a chiropractor regularly.
Yeah.
Coming to see me.
Yeah.
I think maybe self-awareness is probably a good one. I think that every once in a while it's okay just to stop and then just do a little through your body and then to go, oh, is everything okay? Is it feeling okay? Yep. Okay, good. Let's continue. And very rarely do people just stop and then just take a little check-in with themselves. And I think that that's important that people do that as well.
Hugely. On that note, what do you think is something that it's not commonly known about the relationship between the mind and the body, like our emotional well-being and our physical health, just how important that is?
Mm. Well, like we had commented before, like what goes on in your brain definitely shows and communicates with the outside world through your body. Mm. But it's also the sensory input back into the body. And
What is the, do you think there's a big mental health impact for people who are going through an injury or dealing with like rehabilitation? Do you see mood and stuff drop during times like that?
Absolutely. Because you become frustrated because you can't do the things that you would normally be able to do or feel the same way that you would normally feel. And that definitely has a huge impact. Mm. And once you kind of get them through that, bring them along with the journey, also let them know what the expectations are. I think sometimes just going, oh, you know, we'll try this. And then they come in again. They're like, it feels the same. Mm. Nothing's improved. Okay, well, let's try this. I think it's important as a practitioner to let them know, okay, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And we hope that this is the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then we need to reassess the situation and then maybe come in at a different angle or try different techniques or whatever it is, or talk a bit more about what's going on. And I think once you can get people along that journey with the correct kind of mode of thinking about, okay, well, this is going to take, it's a process, right? Health is a process. And it's going to take a little bit of time and energy and effort. I'm going to have to start to kind of make some small lifestyle changes or whatever it is. And then hopefully then at the end, they're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And I am feeling a lot better. Mm. We do see people's mood changes quite a bit when we get them functioning and feeling better.
100%. And do you think that the body, when experiencing a traumatic event and storing it in the system, can be effectively treated through vagal tone stuff? I'm geeking out on vagal tone.
Yeah, so vagal tone is amazing. We talked about this last time
you
came in.
Yeah.
And then I showed you the Resimax and the power.
Very cool.
The vagus nerve is your super highway that connects your body and almost all of the most important things and organ systems in your body with your brain. And when there's pressure on that vagus nerve, it will affect everything from digestion to heart rate to breathing rate. I mean, you think about it, even just anxiety has a physiologic change in the body. You know, what happens is blood pressure increases, your heart rate increases, your oxygen saturation starts to come down because then you start hyperventilating and you're breathing from up all these accessory muscles. Well, if you're doing that, what do you think is going to happen to these muscles through here? Your scalene muscles, your traps, everything's going to get super tight. Then you're going to go, oh, why is this all tight? And then you're going to get worried about it. And then you go, oh, well, why is it so tight? Oh, I'm going to try to stretch. Oh, that hurts now. Oh, and now you've just stimulated pain receptors. Now, it's a little vicious cycle that takes place. And we see it all the time.
Yeah, vagal tone, vagus nerve, for those that don't know, Google it. It truly, from what I understand, it is kind of the closest metric or proxy we have at understanding the health of our nervous system at any point in time. And it speaks to us through heart rate variability and other things like that.
Yep.
And if we learn how to stimulate our vagus nerve, we can accelerate natural healing mechanisms to thrive and flourish. And there are a bunch of ways that we can stimulate the vagus nerve. Can you tell me your top two fave ways?
Well, at the clinic, we use a Resimax, which is a device that uses vibration frequencies. There's a couple good ways to get at it, especially here, the vagus splits right here, and it's quite accessible in the neck. So that's a really good way to stimulate that. Another thing that we tend to use, because the vagus nerve has a direct innervation into the digestive tract.
Yep.
So that's really where they say, oh, you know, your stomach is your second brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of that vagus connection. And when people have been exposed to things like molds, heavy metals, all that stuff that has gone through the food that we eat, or you're ingesting it in water or whatever it is, it goes to your digestive system and then it's absorbed by your stomach lining and then it goes in through that vagus nerve all the way up to the brain. So that's why it's it's not a good thing. So when you've got, yeah, yep. So it's a direct connection. So then people will be like, oh, you know, I've got all these stomach issues going on. But then all of a sudden we start analyzing neurologically how their brain is functioning as a whole, as a unit, and it's not so great either. So we find that now at the clinic, we use low-level laser. Not everyone's going to have these beautiful lasers lying around the house, but we have that at the clinic. We've got four of them at the clinic, and it is so good just to put that right on the stomach, on a very particular setting, and just let it work its magic. The nervous system really likes red light. Red light's really important. So
saunas as well.
Red yes, light absolutely. Yeah. Even like, yeah, most people would probably have more access to that than a little laser from me. But yeah, infrared saunas, even just having red light around you is really important.
Yeah, right.
There are some contraindications, so don't everyone do that, please. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get assessed properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
Are there any massages that you can do on yourself to stimulate vagus tone?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can do... I mean, you can just sit here and vibrate. Sometimes, like I tell people at home, if they don't want to use like a Resimax, they can. Most people now have electrical toothbrushes. So you can actually just turn that on and put it up against your neck.
Yeah.
And just leave it on, well, for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then do the other side for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's a really good way of doing it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend things like, you know, percussion, like massage guns.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a bit harsh. So that might create an inflammatory response, especially in your neck. Pretty delicate structures through there with your carotids and all that. So let's maybe take it a little bit easy there. But just vibration sense is really good.
And you said that, because now I'm scared of using my Resimax too much, because you said you can create a vagal storm. Now, that's not what I want.
No, you don't. So usually your body will give you a little precursor if there's too much stimulation.
Okay.
And we call it a sympathetic storm, not a vagal storm.
Oh, okay.
Sympathetic storm. So what happens is your body, in essence, goes into a very quick fight or flight mechanism. And usually, though, it will give you an indication that that's going to happen. Dizziness. You feel nauseous. So usually, you want to stop it right away when you feel those things. You're like, oh, I'm just feeling a little bit funny. Stop. That's probably too much then. Your nervous system can't take it right now, and it just needs to relax and calm down.
Because there's the ironic part that I couldn't get my head around was that if I'm stimulating the vagus nerve in order to feel more relaxed, I don't want it to send me into a storm of anxiety.
Which is anxiety.
Yeah.
Now you're anxious about that.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it? But you'll... You'll find the perfect amount. You'll feel it. You'll sense it.
Yeah.
You'll start to go, oh, yes, I'm feeling great now. And then once you reach that, you know, you're in cloud nine. Just, yeah. Just ride the wave.
I mean, I fucking hope so, because the last thing that I want to do is use my Resimax being like, oh, yes, here's all this. Yeah. And then be like, oh, a panic attack.
Yeah. No, and it doesn't come on that quickly.
Yeah.
So usually it takes a little bit of time, but like I said, just listen to what your body is telling you. And if it's going, oh, we're just not really feeling well right now, okay, just stop.
Now, speaking of innovation, you are taking quite an innovative approach to treating things that most chiropractors or most people wouldn't think that chiropractors could contribute to helping, such as autism and Asperger's. Can you say more about the work that you're doing there?
Yeah, so I mean, we're not here to treat these different ailments, right? We're not here to treat autism, Asperger's, Tourette's. That's not our goal. Our goal is to look at these patients from a neurologic perspective and say, how well is this person or this child or whoever is functioning? And we do a lot of neurologic tests. We'll also talk with the care or the person about a whole laundry list of different things that they might be experiencing. And then what we do is we go back to basics, because the way that the nervous system works is you're born with these what are called primitive reflexes. And those are designed to help you survive. Suckling reflexes, grasp reflexes, Babinski reflexes, startle reflex, ATNR, ASNTR. So all of these are really important because it helps the baby, the infant, survive.
Mm-hmm.
Those usually go away anywhere from 6 to 18 months because they're integrated And then therefore the body goes, oh, well, I'm surviving just fine. I don't need to suck on my mom's nipple anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that reflex doesn't have to be there anymore. I also have trained my brain to know that if I look at my mother's breast and I'm hungry, I know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already learned that. Your brain has already done that work, and it's integrated properly. The problem is in some of these neurologic conditions, those unfortunately come back. So now that poor little person is now in a fight or flight mechanism. They're trying to just survive. They're not thriving at this stage. So we'll have patients come in and we'll test, even in like, I mean, we're talking old adults coming in and they still have a Babinski reflex.
Say more about what Babinski is.
Babinski reflex is where you go along the underside of the feet and all of a sudden you see the toes spread and flare like this. So that's, again, a survival one. The problem is when you do that, the nervous system, again, has dropped all the way back down to this baseline and you're in fight or flight. You're then not able to really neurologically function as well as you probably should. So things start going away and you're like, oh, why is my memory? I can't ever remember this now. Oh, all of a sudden then muscle tone starts to go down, or they start putting their body into these contorted positions, or they're having trouble recalling things, or there's a whole slew of different things, right? Sensory input is down. They'll start to be like, oh, I'm really numb over here. Oh, now I'm starting to develop all these different like foot drops and all these different movement issues. And it's because they're down here. But then, so we'll be able to identify this, and you can integrate them. So even if they're there, even into whatever age, past that 18 months, we can integrate them by stimulating it. So if you can integrate that base, that neural base, and you can get that solid for them again, then we can move up to the next kind of phase in the nervous system, which is sensory input.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about this. So a child, a baby, has gone, okay, I have this suckling reflex. Okay, yep, I'm doing this. And now all of a sudden my eyes start looking around. Ooh, all this new sensory input with the eyes. And this is where vestibular apparatus comes into play. So dizziness, eye focus, convergence of the eyes, all these. And you know, like sometimes when you look at little babies, they look like they're cross-eyed?
Yeah.
So what happens is that usually then resolves itself, because now they're starting to look around the world and they're going, wow, look at all of this stuff. Ooh, oh, I can see my mom's face now. This is fantastic. She's a source of food. This is amazing. Oh, and then all of a sudden, oh, what's that now? Ooh, why are they putting that into their mouths? And then their body goes, ooh, all this sensory input is starting to come in. And then they go, ooh, I want that. And then what do? Into their mouths. So this is all sensory input. Then the little taste buds are going, whoa, what is this? This is not milk. This is something. Oh, do I like this? Oh, this is a weird texture thing. So your body is getting all this sensory input. Smells, tastes, color, all the feeling, sense of touch, all these different things. And then that goes, ooh. Then it starts to drive to, they start to make noises. So this is where then all the movement comes into play. So this sensory input will drive movement input. So then they'll go, how do I say I want that? Oh, and then pretty soon communication starts.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is we need to keep getting them to go up to these higher levels. And then you've got, at the very top is learning, it's communicating properly, it's doing all these higher, neurologic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is sometimes during these disease processes or outside influences, we start to go down.
Regressing down?
Yes.
Okay.
So we as chiropractors, because we're experts in the nervous system, will then go, okay, let's start from the basics. I will check if I think it's a neurologic case that's coming into my office. And this may be like not necessarily that they're low level function, but something going on. And then we start talking a bit more, and I was like, okay, so the first things I check, primitive reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
It may seem a bit counterintuitive to start there, but that's the foundation. The foundation always needs to be rock solid before you can build on that. And then you can say, oh, okay, yeah, primitive reflexes, you're fine there. Okay, let's think about sensory input now. Let's do all these different things. And if they're having trouble with that, okay, let's drive that sensory input then.
And an example of driving sensory input through a chiropractic lens?
Electric muscle stim, different smells, tastes. We'll put tastes on their tongue. We'll make them wear different colored glasses. We'll do some spinning and movements. We'll do there's a million different things we can do.
Okay. So it's helping people who might be cognitively challenged to be able to, you meet them where they are, and you solidify a platform so that they can move up a functional level of of behaving.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah, so I mean, I don't really care. I mean, I do care what the patient is presenting with. You know, if they're coming in, like recently we had a patient come in, mom and dad brought their 10-year-old in. And we were like, okay, well, let's just get the baseline here. And I must admit, pretty well functioning, really good. So I was like, oh, this is promising, right? And then we just worked our way up and we were explaining. And I was like, we're not trying to treat anything. We're trying to observe what isn't functioning quite right and then just help it along. And that's all it is. And a byproduct of that is then their communication is improved. You know, in autistic kids, that's really important. And it has as much detriment to them as it does to their family unit as well. And it's really important that we can get them working together and communicating together and to have that support system there for them.
It's such an amazing thing. And I'm so glad that there's a ongoing focus to neurodivergent people and the non-traditional medical routes of exploring how we can help people like that. And
absolutely. And there is a time and a place for everything.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, if there's any kind of a neurological developmental delay or there's any kind of issue neurologically as even as adults. It's working together with a team. And that's really important, is just identifying, hey, this is where I can help out. Okay, an OT may come on board. Okay, this is where we can help out. Amazing. Do that. Let's, our primary goal as a healthcare provider, and this has always been my thing, is to help as many people as possible. And we can all work together and do that. And as long as we're all on the same page, working cohesively together, it's the only thing that that's going to help is that patient.
Healing is a team sport.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it really is. And I know in my own experience, I was never a fan of just thinking that there's a silver bullet. The closest thing I've ever found to a silver bullet is connection, true, authentic, real healing connection. But there is so many things that go into the tapestry and the toolkit that makes up a Mitch today that is high functioning. And every story is different. I want to know about you in terms of, I know that you are a fairly well-adjusted person, but have you been kissed, blessed, touched, cursed by the mental health story of your own?
Absolutely.
Can you say more?
So this is a facade, yeah?
I mean, we all are to a large extent.
Absolutely. We all fight the battles internally, and I'm very good at doing that. It's been something I've been working on for a while. You know, I've had my own battles. I've had my own experiences. I've unfortunately seen very close family members struggle with mental health. I've seen colleagues struggle, friends.
It's everywhere.
It is everywhere. And all of us have experienced that to some degree with someone. And yeah, it's, you know, recently I had a colleague that committed suicide, you know, then, you know, the little voice inside my head was like, oh, if I would have just reached out a little bit more, or, you know, if I, how did I not know? How could I not see this? And I kicked myself for a little while, 'cause I wanted to help him.
Yeah. It's so hard when that happens.
Still hurts, right? He was such a good guy.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was going to happen. Oh.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're sharing that.
Mm.
It's real, very real.
Yeah.
And I can tell that you miss him.
Hmm.
What do you miss about him most?
Every conversation that I have ever had with him has been so present. And talking with him, I always felt like I was the only person that he cared about at that time.
Mm.
He was so connected and such a loving, beautiful soul of a person.
Mm.
And, you know, I've tried to take some of those traits on to be like, you know, we all have a lot of other shit going on around us. But right now, right here, this conversation that we're having is really important. And I'm trying to be a lot more present in those.
Mm.
Because he was. And I believe that every single person that had a conversation with him felt exactly the same way that I did.
They felt understood.
Yeah. He was...
What a gift.
And that is rare.
Fuck yeah.
Even some of my best friends, when we're having conversations, they're only thinking about what's going on in their world. And I just sometimes don't feel as connected with them.
Yeah.
And that's... Normal. I don't hate them because they're not present with me at that particular time.
It's not
the
way it sounded.
Yeah. Like, it's just... It was just... He was... so there.
Yeah.
You could see it in his eyes. You could see it in his entire being, his smile, everything.
Mm. I'm a big believer that we can alchemize pain through creating some good and some meaning from it. And so I think this chat today is one example of how you can pay tribute to your colleague. And if you don't mind me asking, what's his name?
Peter.
Peter. What's a story you tell yourself that has plagued you in the past? What's a theme that you believe about yourself or the world that has caused you pain?
It's my battle to fight and mine alone.
What is the battle for Cody?
You know, I'm not necessarily proud of everything that I've done in my life and some of the experiences that I've had to go through even as a very, very, very young child. And for a while there, you know, I didn't want anyone else to worry. You know, I didn't want to be a burden to anyone else, especially like my mom. You know, she had enough on her plate, you know, single mom raising us kids. You know, we were on food stamps for a while. You know, I knew that she was under pressure. She worked her butt off to give us kids, you know, whatever we wanted. And I learned a learned behavior when I was a kid was just to, you know, bottle that up and be like, well, I'm just going to keep suppressing all that because I just didn't want anyone else to worry. I didn't want her to worry.
Mm.
And unfortunately, some of that, those characteristics have haunted me as an adult now. And, you know, I see now my therapist, you know, every fortnight, and it's been really beneficial. It's been really good. It's been freeing. It's been eye-opening. And she told me, this was actually not the last time, the time before that. She goes, even if you don't believe it, I want you to tell yourself this every day. That is not who I am.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, no one's ever given me permission to be able to tell myself that.
Permission to be someone else.
Yeah.
Or to be you.
To be you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What I've done in the past doesn't define who I am today. Or the person I am.
I don't, I don't want you to go further than what you feel comfortable with. Very much want this to be a cathartic healing experience, not a vulnerability hangover. You're alluding to some stuff in the past. Can you go there a bit more to let me know what stuff is holding you back? Or not yet?
It was more along the lines, I guess, of listen, when I was a child, there were some things that happened on more than one occasion that listen, no one's at fault for this. It wasn't like an adult did anything. That's not what this is. But yeah, it was not a great repeated experience. And then there was the, you know, deceit and then don't tell anyone kind of thing. And I don't know why I didn't say anything. I could have. I had opportunities to, I suppose. But I buried it for a long time. And I guess my escape was then to just be really good at everything else so then it wouldn't raise any red flags. So everything was perfect and no one ever had to worry about me. And so, like I said before, like I excelled at school. I was very good at it. You know, even if, yeah, I was really active in the community, in the church, in school, in everything. And I was reliable. And I didn't want, like, even as a kid, you know, I'm mowing lawns and I took pride in it. And, you know, in all the extracurricular, like, activities at school, like even in sport, in drama, in all sorts of different activities, I wanted to be the best. And I think partially the reason why I was doing that was just to not allow the tarnish to come through. Because that's the way I felt. That's the way I internalized it. And yeah, it took me a long time. Probably 2 years ago was the first time I told someone.
Wow.
And I'm pushing 40.
I was going to make a joke to lighten the mood and say, so you kept that inside for 21 years?
Yes, 21. Yes, exactly. It was a lot longer than that.
That's a huge burden to carry for that long that is shaping your every hour of every day.
And right, not that I was actively thinking about it all the time.
No.
Because there's a lot of times, you know, you wouldn't think about it at all. And then all of a sudden something happens, then all of a sudden, whoa, it's right to the front again. And then you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then you push it back down again. And that was my process. And I must admit, it's a hell of a lot easier to let it out. And to talk about it with people. And I don't, you know, who I told, of course, I wouldn't think would judge me for any reason or anything like that. And it was freeing. And I was like, I don't want pity. I don't want any of that. It's happened. You know, I'm not the only one that this has ever happened to. And like I said before, that's not who I am. Doesn't define me. It's not going to hold me back. It's time to move on and through it and address it and then go, okay, that was an experience. I'm not letting it dictate the way I am now.
I feel as though when you just said that, I believed it. Do you believe it? And maybe not fully yet, but some of you has to, surely.
Yeah, some of it, yeah, certainly is. 100% no. No. And will it ever be 100%? I don't know. Probably not.
Do we need it to be?
No. I'm really happy with almost every aspect of my life right now. And I'm in a good place. But that didn't come easy. It just wasn't, that wasn't given to me.
Yeah. It's taken work.
Yeah.
And the work continues.
Always. Yep.
Sounds like as someone who's giving a lot to other people, I hope that you're giving some leniency on yourself and that you find that you are enough just as you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, being a chiropractor has been really cathartic for me. Because I get to take people's pain away. I get to help people function better and exude who they are.
Yeah.
And even sharing this dialogue. And, you know, I've been on a lot of other podcasts before and been on radio and TV and social media, of course. And I think now the next kind of stage for me is to share all of this with people. And, you know, maybe it will help some people out there, which is amazing. And that's really important now in this kind of next phase of my life and career and profession and stuff is, you know, I don't have every answer to everything, but if I can share some of these stories with people and it helps them, amazing. Because there's no use in holding on to that.
Agree. And I think the unburdening in service to others is also going to release a whole bunch of old stories and attachments to some pain that may not need to be here. And I'm really appreciative, as I'm sure everyone is, to be let into that window of your life as well. As we start to bring this home, what's a question that you wish I'd asked you but I didn't?
Not that I have too many, I guess, regrets in my life. But what potentially would be something that I would love to be able to just
redo
or edit or just change? How, you know, hindsight's a beautiful thing, right? But usually those, usually I don't regret anything, because then you've learned valuable lessons and experience with. I guess one of the things as well is I've learned some other valuable lessons from other chiropractors. Because not all of them in the profession have been overly kind to some of the content that I put out. And it's interesting. I can take criticism from Joe Blow, who's like, oh, you're not a real doctor. I was like, ah, for fuck's sake, whatever. I don't fucking care. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. But when another chiropractor says something negative towards you, you know, I've been told by some chiropractors, stop calling it a crack. And I'm like, well, that's actually what resonates really well with a lot of people, because that's the sound it makes. I know that it's called a chiropractic adjustment, and I can explain it to the nth degree. I'm not a moron. But on social media, that doesn't cut through. And I've been able to showcase chiropractic to billions of people around the world. And now I've helped to probably inspire other chiropractors to also put out some great content. You know, there's chiropractors out there that are killing it, that are getting huge amounts of views and followers. And hey, great. We're just helping the profession grow and to just showcase it to more people, which is amazing. That's the goal, right? My goal on social media isn't to have the most amount of likes or the most amount of follows or the most, like, whatever. I just want to show what we do and people's reactions, the human nature and how genuine and working as a chiropractor can actually be really fun.
Mm.
It can be really rewarding and nice as well. But the chiropractors that, you know, say really negative things, that's what hurts.
Mm.
And I know that I can't please everyone. There was this one chiropractor from the U.S. as well, and she talked to me. She sent me a message anyway and said, don't you know that we're fighting all these, like, medical doctors day in, day out? And I was like, are we? I'm just kind of doing my own thing. I've never had a medical doctor come up to me and be like, Cody, you're a fraud. Never had that happen.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said before, there's a time and a place for everything.
Mm.
We need medical doctors.
Yeah.
Because some people require that.
Yeah.
There's a need for that. If your house is on fire, please, please, please call the fire department to have that put out.
Mm.
But when you start rebuilding, maybe don't call the fire department.
Yeah.
Maybe call someone else.
Yeah. Agree.
Exactly the same.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given that you would put on a billboard to help someone with their mental health?
Mm. This is from Dr. Joseph Sweary. Rest in peace. He was one of my professors that taught philosophy at chiropractic school at Northwestern. And I'm probably going to butcher the quote a little bit, but this is the essence of it. Our purpose on this earth is to help people, and therein lies our joy.
Amen. I don't think I've ever found an antidepressant as strong as being in service to other people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. There is something really good that feels really good about making other people feel good.
Yeah.
And being kind is free.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's not hard to do.
Mm.
And I tend to find that anger is a little bit easier for people to show.
Mm.
And if they would just stop, breathe, take a step back, and be like, you know what? We're all born on this earth. We're all going to die on this earth. We're all going to be turned into worms will eat us or ashes or whatever it is. So who the fuck cares?
Yeah. Let's leave it there, because I think there's a lot of medicinal benefit in telling yourself that often. Mm. Who cares? In a good way, not in like a existential way, but in like a, I'm taking myself way too seriously right now. I just need to chill.
Yeah.
My friend, where do people find you online?
They can find me at combinedclinics.com.au. They can find me at drcody.com. They can find me on TikTok and Instagram at drcody_DC. I'll also be adding to my YouTube channel as well. So stay tuned for that.
And the address of the clinic in Sydney, Australia?
Yes, so that is, we're in Darlinghurst, Suite 101, 318 Liverpool Street.
As a patient or as a client of yours, I can say that I wouldn't go to any other chiropractor unless I was in another country and had to. Highly recommend, if you do need a chiropractor, hit up Dr. Cody. And if you want to have not just an entertaining time, but an educational time, please follow him on social media. My man.
Thank you.
Thank you.